Gaurani Sai, Gaurani Sai, Jaya Gaurani Sai. Jaya Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jagannatha, Baladeva Jaya Subhadra. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Nitai Gaura Premadandi Hari Hari Gaura.
His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai. Praying to Kahosi Krishna Chaitanya Baba Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Go Bhakta Bindu ki jai. Chishi Radha. Jagannath Swami ki jai, Ganga Mahi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Gopi Devi ki jai, Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Transcendental Book Distribution ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki jai. All glory to the assembled devotees. Attachment to his lotus feet is the perfection that fulfills all desires. He opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart. Thank you. Acharya Nishtha. How about a D?
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari Jai Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari Jai Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Buddhika Acharya Stotirtha Rishi Srimad His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON BBT Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Buddhika Acharya Stotirtha Rishi Srimad His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai Ananda Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Kuntarachi Mir Bhagavatam ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktavinda ki jai. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Narayanam Namaskritya Narang Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Antato Jai Madhirayet
Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashtaparesha Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Seveya Bhagavatyottama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified in transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. On this 24th day of December 2015 in Chicago, Illinois, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Canto 7, Chapter 10, entitled Pallad, the Best Among Exalted Devotees, text number 24. Shinnara huvacha prahado pitata chakre pituyat samparayikam yataha bhagavan rajan abhishikto dvijati bihi. Shinnara huvacha prahrado pitata chakre pituryat samparayikam yataha bhagavan rajan abhishikto dvijati bihi. Srinarada huvacha prahrado pitata chakre pituryat samparayikam yataha bhagavan rajan abhishikto dvijati bihi. Srinarada huvacha Narada Hubacha Prahado Pitata Chakre Pityut Sambarahikam Abhishikto Dvijati Bihi. Srinarada Hubacha Parado pitata chakre pituryat samparayikam abhishikto dija. Ladies, Srinarada huvacha parado pitata chakre pituryat samparahikam yataha bhagavan rajan abhishikto dvijati bihi. Srinarada huvacha prahlado pitata chakre pituryat samparahikam yataha bhagavan rajan abhishikto dvijati bihi. Shri Narada Huvacha, Narada Muni said, Prahradaha, Prahlad Maharaj, Api, also, Tatha, in that way, Chakre, executed, Pituhu, of his father, yet, whatever, Samparayikam, ritualistic ceremonies performed after death. Yata, even as. Aha, order. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rajan, O King Yudhishthir. Abhishiktaha, he was enthroned in the kingdom. Vijati bihi, by the Brahmins present. Translation. Sri Narada Muni continued, thus, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead ordered, Prahlad Maharaj performed the ritualistic ceremonies for his father. O King Yudhishthir, he was then enthroned in the kingdom of Aranyakashipu, as directed by the Brahmins. Purport. It is essential that society be divided into four groups of men, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Here we see that although Prahlad was perfect in every respect, he nonetheless followed the instructions of the Brahmins who performed the Vedic rituals. Therefore, in society there must be a very intelligent class of leaders who are well-versed in the Vedic knowledge so that they can guide the entire populace to follow the Vedic principles and thus gradually become most perfect and eligible to return home back to Godhead. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. I'm sorry, I forget how long the class goes. What do we aim for? 8:30 or so? Okay, thank you. Huh? 9 o'clock? Well, then you'll have to tolerate some of my poems and shlokas. So, here we are after the very dramatic killing of Hiranyakashipu, the offering of the prayers of Prahlad to Lord Narsingadev. And in the previous part of this chapter, there's this very important exchange where Lord Narsingadev wanted to offer Prahlad a benediction. Please take something, anything you want. You can have as many planets as you want, like that. And Prahlad protested. I'm not a vanik. I'm not a merchant. We're not doing business here. Please don't tempt me, my lord. Right? Remember that? And then it goes on and said, well, if you do want to give me a benediction, because this is an important relationship here, is that the Lord wants to give blessings to his devotees. And so the first instinct is for the devotee to say, I'm satisfied just with serving you, right? This is what a pure devotee feels. But then he sees that it's actually a service to allow the Lord to accept the blessing of the Lord. So in that regard, you can accept blessings, right? But what does he ask for? Remember? Yadi dasasi me kamaan varantang varadarshaba kamaanam vidyasangroham bhavadastu vinevaram. It says, if you want to give me a blessing, some benediction, or best of the benedictors, then please let not material desires ever take root in my heart. This is the best benediction you can give me. You see what a wonderful prayer that is. So he accepts that. And then a few verses later, he prays that his father will be relieved from the reactions of all of the torment that he inflicted upon Prahlad. And Lord Nrisimhadeva assures him that not only the Hiranyakashipu, but 21 generations before have been delivered by your devotion. So, and then now Prahlad has to actually take on a role that is really antithetical to his real spirit, which is simply to be a humble servant, and he has to take the role of the king of the leader of the whole universe, as it were. And one of the things, as I was reviewing this chapter, well, this is pretty amazing. I mean, after all, he's still a 5-year-old boy. Now, he was empowered to offer those prayers. Right? You remember that? He felt incompetent, and then he was touched on the head. Was it the conch? I think it was the hand. Yeah, Dhruva was the conch. So, and then he offered these beautiful prayers. And now he's going to become the ruler? Well, this is another empowerment. This is another amazing and worshipable, glorious empowerment that Krishna can give. Even though he's such a young boy, he's still a pure devotee. And he's been empowered to perform this activity, not only of offering prayers, but of actually being the king of the kingdom. And so that's another aspect of this chapter that was very wonderful to contemplate. Now, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about Srila Prabhupada talks about, as he has in many places in his books, the importance of organizing society according to Varnashram. And whenever I read about this, I always think, well, how does that pertain to us as devotees? In one sense, the ISKCON society is not, at this point, organized according to that strict varna and ashram. But you can see that this is, in order for Krishna consciousness to really expand throughout the world, and be significant in countries in ruling, there has to be this organization. And indeed, as famously, Srila Prabhupada in his last days was saying, oh, this is my job, you know, my task is only half completed. I wasn't able to establish Varnashram. And clearly, what he wanted to happen is that within a society, there would be an ideal demonstration of that, right? Probably on, you know, he was aiming to go to Gita Nagari to show it has to be in a rural setting that in order to have proper vaishyas and the cow protection and all these different things. So this is it. We have to accept this as an essential part of the preaching mission, because there are always these two tracks in our own devotional life. One is, of course, our desire to advance spiritually, and all the, quote, internal things that we do. I often think, where is Varnashram in an ecstatic kirtan? Is anyone thinking, oh, there's a Brahman, there's a Kshatriya, there's a Vaishya, there's a... It doesn't pertain. It doesn't pertain, right? Where is Varnashram when you're just sitting listening to Krishna Katha? There's nothing. It doesn't pertain. And in fact, it's said that one who is distinguishing Vaishnavas according to birth and according to class and all these things is actually has a hellish mentality. You know, Arche Vishnav Shiladi Gurushanadabhadi Vaishnava Jati Buddhir. That to see a Vaishnava according to his birth or material caste or anything is actually hellish mentality. But when it comes to our function in the society, and I mean the larger society as well as our internal society, then we naturally tend toward our specific psychophysical nature. You know, I mean, I always count my blessings, if it were, that I joined where I did. that I was able in New York, in Brooklyn, with Maharaj here. He was here there at the time. So that my critical propensities, you know, I was very much a critic of everything, could be used in proofreading Prabhupada's books, finding little mistakes in the, which is what the service was, right? And somehow that was, you know, Krishna's blessing upon me, you know. And so my psychophysical nature could be used, you know. So we all kind of, one of the tasks of the leadership within our own little society is to see how each individual could be best engaged and to, you know, fulfill the mission of becoming purified and going back to Godhead. So, as we know, if you study Srila Prabhupada's life or the acharyas, previous acharyas, they all were very eager to have these two lines. And really, they come from Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya had his internal and external reasons for appearing, right? From the very beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you read that in the Adi Lila. And internally, of course, he's Krishna. He wants to experience the great highest ananda of Krishna bhakti from the point of view of the best bhakta or the best devotee, namely Srimati Radharani. Right? So this is all internal. And Lord Chaitanya, Krishna came for that, you know, internal reason. But he also has the reason of spreading the Sankirtan movement. In other words, out of compassion to give it to the benighted residents of this Kali Yuga so that they could enter into devotional service and also go back to Godhead. So really, all of our acharyas demonstrate that. You know, I was reading recently Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the last day of a festival is his appearance day. Or is it disappearance? I forget. I think it's disappearance. But and so he had those, 9 years? He took a vow to chant a billion names of Krishna. You know the history. And he cloistered himself away in Mayapur, and he just chanted and chanted. It took 9 years, if you think how long it takes to... And he didn't do much preaching then, although there was a disciple, I think at least one disciple who was made at that time. But it was only after that, you know, that he eventually went to Calcutta, right? You know, back into the throes of the material energy and started the whole preaching mission. And so, and throughout all of our devotional lives, we have our morning program, and this is internal. You know, we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're hearing to Bhagavatam, we're seeing the deities, chanting kirtan, worshipping the guru. And this is for our own upliftment, as well as all of those who we counteract here. It's an internal aspect. But then there's the essential aspect of the preaching mission. And really, they work off each other. You can't go and spread Krishna consciousness unless you're Krishna conscious. The more Krishna conscious you are, the more effective you will be in distributing books, chanting the holy name, or speaking to people and planting a seed of interest in devotional service. And at the same time, without engaging in the preaching mission, how can we really say that we're followers of Srila Prabhupada or the Parampara? This is this whole line is a preaching line. So the both aspects has to be there. So Prahlad Maharaj is going to surrender to this role of being the king. And Srila Prabhupada, he was also concerned that society as a whole will see a demonstration of Varnashram and this will be a way of organizing society in such a way that everyone can be elevated. And Srila Prabhupada never failed when Varnashram came up in his meetings with various people and often the lecture, that it's not a caste system. It's not by birth. It's by quality and activity. And I think it's Narada Muni who has a verse, I forget the Sanskrit, which says, if someone is born in a Shudra family, but he displays the qualities of a Brahmin, he should be regarded as a Brahmin, and vice versa. Someone may be born in a Brahmin family, but if his activities are all in the modes of lower modes of nature, he doesn't have the qualification of a Brahmin, shouldn't be respected as one. And this is a very revolutionary concept. And even in Lord Chaitanya's time, as you probably know, the smarter Brahmins, as we called, were objecting to the whole Sankirtan movement when it began, because Lord Chaitanya was uplifting the greatest. He made Haridas Thakur into the Namacharya, recognizing his purity, and Advaita Acharya, offered him the first remnants of the Shraddha ceremony out of respect, which is a revolutionary act. So, with that understanding, then it behooves us to understand what are the qualities of the different varnas and how can the ashrams be set up.
His Prabhupada says,
without the proper instruction, just see, what the state of this world is. I mean, I've been following, politics since I was a kid. This is my father trained me in that, And I've never seen anything like it. I mean, even people who are just ordinary commentators. What kind of leadership, people see these so-called candidates for president of them, this powerful country, the most powerful country in the world. And people are appalled within and without of the United States. Just see the contrast. When by the force of the age of Kali, the darkness becomes deeper and deeper. And when the lying becomes so blatant, then what do people as a whole, how do they regard that? It's almost like, it reminds you of Vena, The people, you want to go to the forest that's mentioned in the 12th canto. So the state of society is so drastically covered that we can see the urgency. This is the urgency for Krishna consciousness. For devotees to become strong in their own devotional lives and character. To be a countervailing force of the rapid destruction of society in this modern Kali Yuga. So really, that's an impetus. What are our impetuses for, progressing in devotional life? So there are two. One is our own desire to experience the higher levels of devotional service, the nectar of Krishna consciousness. That's essential. That's given. But at the same time, we should feel the urgency, out of compassion for the suffering people. That somehow or other, that if we can inject devotional service into society, then there's some hope for the future. Otherwise, it's just the fast escalator downhill to more and more suffering of the people. So this is this periodically comes up, the qualities of the different ashrams and varnas are also defined in this canto very nicely. So there's no doubt. So one of the most important aspects of our efforts to preach and also our own devotional life is seeing the Srimad Bhagavatam and corollary books as the ultimate authority in our own lives, this pramana aspect. Establishing the authority of Bhagavad Gita, how Srila Prabhupada fought for that, in the beginning of the movement, there were so many Bhagavad Gitas, but where is the Bhagavad Gita as it is? Where is the book that has the potency to really change people's lives, that can become the guiding force or the guide intelligence in their lives? I was always drawn to the last part of the 16th chapter. When I first read the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it was before I became a devotee. I was reading another Bhagavad Gita. And it was all very interesting. And when I came to that 16th chapter, I said, oh, this is describing me. This is how I am. I can really relate to these descriptions of the demonic qualities. And then, but later on, you know, joining the temple and, you know, studying the Bhagavad Gita as it is, those last four verses always provide a very, how do you say it, like a, you know, a glass of cold water thrown in your face, kind of very important instruction. So he says there, after describing the hair-raising fate of those who are demons, you know, they go to a hellish existence, then Krishna sums up, and he says, Tribadham natakasse dham dvaram nashanam atmana kama krodas tata lobas tasmaretam trayang chajet. That there are three gates leading to this hellish existence I just described. Lust, anger, and greed. One should give them up unless you're reconciled to hellish existence and great suffering. And then he describes, he goes back and forth, he says, Etava mukta kontaya tamo dvares tibhinadaha achadat atmanakshayas tato yati parangatim. Just like that painting, you know, that illustration where there's one stair going up and there's one stair going down. This is exactly what this is all about. Those who have escaped these gates, these to hell, these three, they act for their ultimate good. Achadat atmanik shreyas, for shreya, and tato yati param gatim. They ultimately go to the supreme abode, back to Godhead. And then the last two verses. Those who give up the vidis, the instructions, the do's and the don'ts contained in Shastra, bona fide authorized Shastra, and act according to their own whims, they can never attain happiness, they can never attain perfection, they can never go to the supreme abode. Therefore, the last verse, tasmat chastram pamanam te karya karya vavastito gyatva shastra vadhanoktam karma karta miharasi. Therefore, to understand what to do and what not to do, and this actually plays off the theme of our weekend, you know, accepting those things favorable and rejecting those things unfavorable, that's the beginning of surrender, right? So that's where, you know, we all start. In fact, everybody is doing that. Everyone has some pramana that they're accepting, but they're fallible pramanas, they're sending them to hell. So therefore one should accept Shastra as the evidence, as the intelligence, as the guide for what to do and what not to do. And then understanding that, one should accept and reject as a matter of duty. Meaning that in our conditioned state, we don't want to accept, because the Shastra is telling us to do things that we're not attracted to, or that are like the last thing we want to do. That's the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. The last thing Arjuna wanted to do was fight. It went against his gut reaction, his feelings, his emotions, right? But eventually he did it, because he accepted Krishna, who was, you know, Shastra personified. So, becoming, first of all, that means reading so much. Understanding, studying, discussing, really making the books of Srila Prabhupada the content of our intelligence, so to speak. And then having understood, accept the injunctions in the Shastra as our life and soul. And that this is our duty to act according this way. And so we see that Prahlad Maharaj, you know, he had the opportunity in this amazing pastime of being instructed in Shastric knowledge by Narada Muni within the womb. So he was never conditioned, really, and always a pure devotee. And so, in spite of the greatest difficulty, being born into a demonic family, being tormented by his father, having to be taught by, you know, these Chanda Namarka, all the things he didn't want to hear, he never left that. That knowledge that he had gained and his level of devotion was never affected. He never deviated. So that's the perfect example of a pure devotee. Nothing can deviate No amount of, a temptation of sense gratification, no amount of anyone's arguments can deviate. Absolutely fixed. So to come to that point should be our internal goal, and that point of absolute nishta and fixation. And we have so many wonderful examples, both in recent history. You know, I was reading this wonderful biography of Yamuna Devi on the plane. Just like time disappeared. You know, to enter into this amazing relationship, you know, and that whole adventure of starting the London Yatra, you know, how difficult it was for those three couples, Yamuna and Guru Das and Mukunda and Janaki and Shyamasunda and Malati. So much difficulty, no place to live, you know, and then, of course, just being able to survive, you know. But the letters, Srila Prabhupada coming, you know, encouraging them, you know, to stay the course. And eventually, of course, it was successful. They met George, the chanting. It was all based on this, so much chanting, you know. But at the same time, this surrender, undergoing the difficulties to come to the point of success. And that principle is there in every stage of devotional service. Like we were thinking about this theme for the weekend, I realized, you know, surrender is not an event. It's an endless process. And you read the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his Sharanagati, it's all about this theme. You know, he has several songs on each of these six elements of surrender. And it's very fascinating because he has, the first song is kind of basic surrender. But then he goes on to higher levels of aspiring for accepting the things favorable. You know? And this idea of constantly feeling that we have further to go, that we're just starting, that we're helpless, and we need all the mercy we can get. And that sense of ardent prayer and longing is really a measure of advancement. And in that book also, it's described how, but what if we don't feel any longing? You know, we just kind of here, the mind is going here and there. What to do? You know? And so then you should pray for that sincerity. Pray for that longing. Right? Vishnujan Swami, you know, that's also mentioned how he started the kirtan. You know, I think in L.A. is where it really got going, you know, every day. And so someone said, oh, you're so enthusiastic all the time. How do you do it? He says, well, sometimes I'm not enthusiastic, but I act enthusiastic, and then it comes, you know. So the idea is to know the standard and to pray for it. So much of you read the literatures, and there are verses and songs that are really prayers and expressions. This, you know, in the Nectar of Devotion, there's a section called submission. You know, as part of the different, you know, and really that submission. And this is an editorial comment. Maybe I did a lot of research. It's called vigyapti, and there are three different kinds, right? But the submission is not surrender. Submission means submitting a report. That's the submission. We can discuss it later and look it over. And so some of them are just reporting how fallen I am. Reporting, you know, merely like confessing. You know, like Bhaktivinoda, of course, he's a pure devotee. He's completely free, but he's giving us an example. I spent my whole life uselessly cultivating material knowledge. Then I developed this whole family, and I'm completely immersed in it. You know, but it's not like you become depressed from that. Then there's always that element where, therefore, I have no shelter but your lotus feet. Please bless me. You know, please empower me to perform devotional service. So that mood, and what is our, you know, a central sadhana is the chanting of the holy name, the chanting of our japa, and of course kirtan, they go together. But that chanting is so essential. To pray through, as we chant, as Prabhupada said, like calling a little child for his mother. What could be more desperate? What could be more helpless? Right? And that's really our situation. So that aspect is one of the things that we constantly run, you know, we encounter in our devotional life, is that, okay, I've come so far now, I reached a plateau. You know, how do I get off this plateau so that I can continue to advance up the mountain, so to speak, you know, to the point of purity? And that's we need the need for association, for taking stock, for entering into the mood of this prayerfulness, and also hearing about the great devotees, such as Prahlad Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, and some of his wonderful followers. We can learn so much from their mood also. So, it's not 8:30, it's certainly not 9 o'clock, but maybe we can have some discussion on these topics if there's any questions or comments. This was kind of sprung on me a little bit during the middle of Japa period. I didn't have time to do that much research. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you very much. One phrase that came to mind that devotees are, you know, you would hear from time to time is complacency is a demoniac quality.
What is it? Complacency?
Complacency is a demoniac quality, and that just kind of stuck in my mind, and you just brought it to the light, you know, the downside of being in, you know, continuing to try to progress. But that's one phrase that kind of came to mind.
Interesting. I never heard that one before. I guess you could call it the demoniac quality. It's really like the influence of the mode of ignorance, you know? Because it's kind of, in a sense, it's kind of, okay, this is as far as I'm going to go this lifetime. Right? But that's not what Krishna consciousness is all about. You know, you can't stop. In other words, if you're not advancing, you're regressing. You know, because advancement is really a transformation of desire. It's a transformation of the heart. Right? You look at the examples are legion. The gopis, you know, they never feel satisfied, you know. In that, you know, they're always longing for more service to Krishna, and the whole pastimes. You studied the 10th canto. They don't really spend that much time with Krishna, right? In the morning, he goes out, and you know, and they their minds run after him, you know, and they spend all day chanting about him, right? Longing for him to come, and then he comes back. And there's this incredible festival of his return. There's a whole poems written about it, Ashtakas, I can share with you if you want, about Krishna coming back from the forest and the great festival in the hearts of Yashoda Mayi and all the gopis, you know. And then he comes into the cow pens, he goes home. You know, so externally at least, you know, but the longing is there. The incredible desire is there. And that's, complacency is exactly the opposite of that. Is that, well, okay, I've got enough, you know. But in Krishna consciousness, there's never enough. There's always further things to discover. That's the whole idea of being ever fresh. So if we find ourselves, you know, in that situation of feeling kind of stultified or stagnant, we need to associate with someone who's really enthusiastic and pick up on that. The moods of the great devotees.
Yeah. We're either going up or down.
Yeah, we're either advancing or regressing. Thank you. Time is always pushing us. You know, that there's no question. We're moving toward the end of this body, and so then what? You know, I sometimes think, you know, in the third canto, I remember reading the third canto when I first joined, there was no third canto. I think there was one volume of it, maybe, or it was in production. And that was my first proofreading job, you know. And so I remember vividly the battle of Hiranyaksha and Varaha. That was the first thing I was working on. And then we moved forward, and then we got to Kapiladeva's instructions. And that was just like a revelation. When I went to India the first time in 75, that was the one book I took with me. It was four books. The third canon was four books. It was this one, like, pink cover. And I was studying that. And one thing that was just so amazing was the prayers of the child in the womb. You know, he's actually revealing what the child prays. And it was more or less like, I blew it. You know, I'll definitely serve you next time. You know, now I'm in this suffering position. It's very, you know, agonizing. And the idea is to wake up, the living entity wakes up after 6.5 months. That's solar time. Probably it's 7 months. You know, the 10-month thing, that was after 10 months. Those are lunar months. You multiply it out, it's 10 lunar months or 9 solar months. So, he's describing the movements of the conditioned living entities. And so this is someone who's not being born into a devotee family. So in spite of those prayers, those ardent prayers, the trauma of birth, you know, you forget everything. And then he's being raised and trained, and so, you know, he's missing. So let's project. You know, let's be serious. And that is, okay, I became complacent. I slacked off on my sadhana. I'm not going back to Godhead. I'm not going back. I just. So that means we've got to go into the womb again. What are our prayers going to be now? Hopefully, you know, we'll be born into a devotee family. But still, won't we feel a whole ton of regret at that point? Why didn't I go to Mangalartik? Why didn't I chant my rams? You know? That's really what we're headed for. I mean, we don't die. Death is an illusion, right? That's the first lesson of the Bhagavad Gita. So where is our consciousness going to be? So why not? The whole idea is the Shastra and the gurus and the sadhus can give us the impetus to become serious on that basis also. I like to think of it like this. The first lesson, really, you know, although eventually we're not supposed to want liberation, right? But that's an original impetus for devotional life. Well, otherwise, why would Prabhupada, you know, janma mrityu jara vyadhi, you know, birth, death, old age, and disease? Krishna says right in the Bhagavad Gita, this is part of knowledge. So in the conditioned state, certainly our desire for liberation is an important impetus. So think of it like this. You've got Durga, right, with her trident, right, the threefold miseries, all this suffering, pushing you from behind. Get up, go to Mangalarti, chant your rounds, get going, even though you don't feel like it, right? Get serious. Otherwise, you'll suffer a whole ton in your next life. But in front of us, we have Krishna inviting us, attracting us to come. So on both sides. But the thing is, when you get into Maya, the attraction isn't there. But at least logically, we should understand. I don't want to take birth again. You see what I'm saying? So we have both advantages. But it only works if you actually open yourself up to the Shastra. And you take it very serious as your life and soul, then these impetuses can keep us moving forward nicely.
And then Srila Prabhupada said, we don't see the time factor, how everything's just ticking away. It's so subtle.
Yeah, but that's really the mode of ignorance. You know, the time is, we're just finishing, I give class, a lot of classes in San Diego, the 11th chapter of Gita. And Arjuna, you know, first he wants to see the universal form, then he's amazed, then he's frightened. I mean, who are you? Who are you anyway? This is not my Krishna, my friend. Kalos miloka chayakrit pavidho. You know, the answers. You know, this is the verse I always pointed out because all kinds of people come. This was a verse that was chanted, or at least remembered, by Robert Oppenheimer when the first atom bomb blew up. I don't know if you all knew that. He was a little bit of a student of Bhagavad Gita. And that they weren't sure, this is what, you know, they weren't sure, maybe it would have blown up the whole world, you know, so they had to test it just in case. So it didn't blow up the whole world, but it was, you can imagine. So then, you know, Arjun is very frightened, and eventually he comes to the point of, okay, please remove it, and Krishna does. So there's like three places in the Gita where Krishna says, "Time, I am time," you know. And time is this great destroyer. This beautiful prayer, let me share it with you, from Uddhava. It's in the middle of the Uddhava Gita. And you know how it is, like, you know, Parikshit periodically asks Sukadev to go on speaking and ask questions, and Arjun does the same thing. This is how it works, you know, and that enlivens the speaker, and they keep going. So in the middle of the Uddhava Gita, Uddhava has this prayer, a beautiful prayer. And of course, he takes the role of a conditioned soul, you know, because he's learning the Uddhava Gita. And he says, Dashtam janam sampatitam bilesmin kalahina chudra sukodu tarsham samudharayanam kripayapavaga vichobira sincha mahanubhava. Says, my dear Lord, I am fallen into this snake hole, bilesmin, in which this poisonous snake of time is dwelling. Kalahina. And I'm being bitten by that snake. Dashtam janam sampatitam. Sampatitam means totally fallen. And even in this state, chudra sukoru tarsham, I have this strong thirst, desire for insignificant sense gratification. It's very, very, two lines, he describes it wonderfully. So then he says, samudharayanam kripayapavaga, out of your mercy, please uplift me completely. How? Vachobadasincha mahanubhava. Oh, great Lord, by pouring your words on me, literally sprinkling your transcendental words upon me. And in this way, uplifting me. So, you know, these kind of prayers and the Bhagavatam itself, this is, you take it into your heart, you try to, you know, enter into the mood of these prayers of these great devotees. And in this way, you know, you get the impetus for advancement. To really feel, oh, this is how I am. You know, this is really a contaminated, dangerous place. And I need all the mercy I can get, you know, Krishna to uplift me out of this, you know, with his instructions, with his association of his devotees, with the holy name and all these things. And you appreciate more what we've already been given. You know, you've been given so much, but the materialistic mind tends to become stale because of the influence of the modes of nature, and we turn away from it. So that's why, you know, I always emphasize, I mean, it's a given, but it's not a given. The morning program, so important. It's a structure. It was created by Prabhupada over time. It didn't, you know, and it has all the five, as we pointed out in one of these meetings, all the five elements of the most important of the 64 devotional service: association with devotees, chanting the holy name, worshiping the deity, living in a holy place, and hearing Bhagavatam. You know, so if we don't have all of those, you know, we need a full diet of all of those every day to protect us from the incursions of the material energy and to enliven us to progress in devotional service. So I encourage you, everybody, come on time and engage in all of those things with full consciousness. Any other questions, comments? Jai, thank you, Maharaj.
I was going to save it for when we sit together, but I'll... we've been discussing a little bit, because of the previous verses, about Varnashram and the, you know, rituals, and he's a pure devotee, but he's doing the ritual anyway because he's setting an example. And
right.
You said something about when you touched on the Varnashram topic that sounds almost identical with what my conversation 2 days ago with Tukaram was, which was Varnashram means, what did Prabhupada mean when he spoke about Varnashram? It means, you know, Tukaram has his take on it, which is some agrarian cow protection And then, you know, that's Varnashram, or at least a step in the direction of. But then there's this, you know, the big picture of society. And how is society going to get there? Or, you know, how are we as servants of Prabhupada's mission, wishing to see that happen, going to do that without
burning it all
showing
down?
Showing an example.
Showing an example, yeah.
So is the example the farm community? And then the rest is, we go on Sankirtan, and like you were saying, we're in the Kirtan, we're in the class, and we're just, those distinctions are not pertinent. It's not an easy question to answer, but it's, you know, there was some silence, so I thought I'd bring it up.
It's been like a puzzle, you know. I mean, the devotees have, you know, because obviously Prabhupada really wanted it to happen, you know, just like the BI, the Bhaktivedanta Institute, that last year Prabhupada was constantly, emphasizing it. And it came to be, you know, devotees actually manifested because of that. And there was also, you know, Prabhupada's emphasis on Varnashram was also there, and his desire to go to Gita Nagari and everything, and his statement. So devotees have been puzzling, well, how do we do this? How do we actually do this? And at the same time, you know, we have all our temples in the middle of the city, and, how do we do it in the city? So, I don't know. I mean, I know there's a great effort to do it. You feel like in India or a place where, you know, you can, it's more of a cultural thing, or you have an opportunity where you have a control of the environment. I'm thinking in Indonesia, there are some places where you try to manifest. But how will that be a model for society? That's the question. And I think perhaps, maybe, you know, because there's like a whole revolution going on in agriculture as well, and people are developing a desire to have more homegrown stuff. In the eco village. I don't know. Were you there? Yeah. And so it's kind of an effort to make a model of a way in which you can live, you know, close to the land, be very healthy, utilize various techniques, that it can be self-sufficient, and also manifest, you know, the basic principles as the cow protection is there and so forth. I honestly don't know. There are these two strains, you know, go to the cities, preach, do Harinam, book distribute, book production. Well, book production, you know, means employing so much, you know, computers and the modern techniques. Where does that fit in the, you know, simple life? You know, well, okay, it's yukta vairagya, but there's a whole industry out there, you know, that's supporting it. Like, I got this little iPad here, but there's no way in a simple agrarian society where we have that. Okay, we won't need it. We'll just have, you know, books. We'll just write, you know, on palm leaves. You know, cool. But I got the, like, you know, 23 libraries sitting in here. You know, it's very convenient. You know? So I don't know how it's going to work. Forgive me. Any other comment, question? All right. One of my, since I missed all of the ninth chapter with all the prayers, I have to share one of my favorite prayers with you from Prahlad Maharaj. Yasmat priya priya viyoga sa yoga janma shokagni nasakata yonashadayamana. Dukaushadam tadabhi dukkam atadhyaham bhuman bhamami vadameta vadasya yoga. So in this way, it's such a wonderful prayer. In two lines, he gives a whole summary of suffering in material life. Yasmat priya priya viyoga so yoga. So these things you think about, that which is dear to us, right? Beginning with the body, you know, and so many other things, is progressively or sometimes suddenly ripped away from us. This is one aspect of suffering. And the other side is things which are abominable and which we hate and which are, you know, are forced upon us. Right, old age, disease, death, like that.
And this creates a shokagnina, is like a fire of lamentation in this world. And not just one body, but sakala yonasha dayaman. I'm burning in this fire. Prahlad takes the role of a conditioned soul. I'm burning in this fire of lamentation and suffering for many, many births in different species even, characterized by these two aspects. And so in the human form especially, we have dukkha aushadham. In order to remedy, we have various remedies to relieve the misery, right? Think of the multi-trillion dollar medical industry, you know. So that's dukkha aushadham. But tadapi dukkham, the aushadhi itself becomes the source of more dukkha, right? And, you know, think of the medical, you know. They have these medicines they invent, very expensive. They don't want to cure you, let's face it. They want to treat you. So you'll keep coming back and buying their outrageously expensive pharmaceuticals, which have untold, you know. One of the side effects is death, you know. Anyway, so it's a perfect illustration. I've heard that. I haven't seen that. So you have dukkha aushadham tadapi dukkham. And then in like four syllables, he has the root of the whole problem, atadiyaham. Because we're thinking we're something we're not, namely this body. That's atadiyaham. So in three lines, he's got the whole philosophy. So then what's the solution? Bhuman bhamami vadameta vadasi yogam. Oh, great Lord, he's of course speaking in the Shingadev. Please instruct me in your dasya yoga, in your bhakti yoga. That's the real remedy. So that's a, you know, seminal verse for me. I just love that verse. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.